Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hello, my name is Bob Stanley, and I'm in St. Etienne.
And I'm Pete Wiggs, and I'm also in St. Etienne.
And you have to represent Sarah, because Sarah's a little under the weather. So which one of you is going to do Sarah's voice?
Pete can do it.
The croaky version. That could be the album number 48. The croaky version. It's an album about the frogs of the counties. I think the last time I saw you was the last time you were here, 2012. Have I got that pretty close?
Yeah, that's right, 2012, yeah.
Let's just get right into it. It took way too long for you guys to make an album about childhood. It's not really that either, because there's Brexit in there. So let's try to take the whole big stew and say, you know, when did you wake up and go, let's go back to the burbs.
Well, it was a couple of things. Sarah had already written a couple of songs, which she played us and we really loved, which were Dive and Take It All In, which were really... Well, Dive was like looking back to when she was a teenager. I didn't realise that until she told us. But Take It All In was clearly about sort of contentment and where she lives now. And I think we probably all felt drawn lyrically to writing something about, you know, the political situation, because it's like hard to avoid. Definitely hard to avoid. And I was just in a bookshop and I saw a book called Home Counties, and that made me think, oh, Home Counties, we all live in the Home Counties. Looked up the definition of Home Counties, there isn't really one. And so that, I then suggested that could be an album title, and the whole thing came together. So it's kind of like living in the Home Counties now and then, I suppose, and the differences. And it's not really so much looking back to childhood. It's more probably looking back to sort of teenage years and then moving back there when we got kids and the differences.
The second you could get out of these places and get into the big city and the lure of it and the clubs and the DJs and the culture, you got the heck out. And then you think, well, going back to suburbia and giving that up because of family and then the loss of that, right?
Yeah, exactly the same thing happened to me. So my son's 14 now. And as soon as my then girlfriend said she was pregnant, I was like, we've got to move. And
then, you've got to get out and have a good place for the kids.
Yeah, it was a bit instant.
The city is evil.
Yeah, I didn't really need to. Well, I think we were just, she was a chef in a pub and we were sort of overdoing it a bit in those days. So in a way, it was a sort of relief thing. Of going, I can, let's go off and do normal, be normal people.
Whatever the but yet, you know that our kids, within seconds, now my daughter does live in San Francisco, and it's a little different, but not that much. But the second that they get a chance, they're going to be right back in the city. You know, you've gotten them to escape to give them, quote, a better life, but within seconds, they're going to be right back there.
Yeah, of course.
The same needs we have.
Exactly, yeah. It's just, you have to be older to realize, I suppose, that you don't always want to live in a city all your life. But I think mostly, certainly in London, I'm sure, San Francisco and most American cities are the same. It's just too expensive to afford anywhere. So we live in like a one-bedroom flat in London. I've got a two-year-old now. So he hasn't got a room. So we're going to have to work out something at some point, which is probably moving out of London.
Radio 4 versus Radio 1. Now, it's interesting because back in the day, Radio 1 wasn't Radio 1. Right? It wasn't like a hit machine. But the whole lineup, because I'll listen to Radio 2 sometimes, it's very interesting. And you don't know which one's the oldies station anymore, right? Which one is officially, because, Radio 4 will do the new wave hour and the, So which one is the oldies station at this point?
Right? You hear a lot of things from the 90s on Six Music, which is 25 years ago.
Crazy as that is.
I know, and listening to Radio 2 when I was growing up. They play Guy Mitchell and Frank Sinatra,
right,
as well as
Pat Boone and
as well as Neil Sedaka and Neil Diamond and things that were current in the 70s. But that's basically exactly what Six Music's doing now, but it's doing it with like an arched eyebrow and thinks it's very clever.
But they wouldn't see themselves that way. They would see themselves as a very current rock and roll station as opposed to Radio 1, which is a pop station, at least during the day until they go at night for total hip-hop, whatever it is.
I think the thing with Six Music for me is like they play a lot of good records. They've got a lot of good DJs. But I feel so completely targeted by it that I find it really off-putting. It gets my hairs on end. It's because it's all slightly wrong. It's like slightly wrong for me. And it's really pleased with itself. That's my main problem with it. But I mean, they play a lot of good records. I'd say it's just the Radio 2 and Radio 4 more.
In terms of the sound, and Sean Lee. Now, what's not clear in the things I've read, how much of it did you record, quote, at home and other places? And at what point did it get to him to kind of bring it together? Because some of them are real bangers, and you've got heavy low end, but some of them you have purposely, we're getting really geeky here, you've purposely rolled off and made sound like, you know, a certain place, so to speak, right? So back to, you know, Dive, that's a banger. That's a low end boomer. You know, I actually, if Sarah was here, I was going to tell her that Contact by Edwin Starr, I know that you chose him for sounds, but where was that borderline, that chasm where you said, okay, we're going to jump over and hand it over? Because you're not big hander over people at all. Not that you're control freaks, but...
Well, I think we probably either do it like 100%. I mean, we did stuff with Brian Higgins, which was like we completely left it to people at Xenomania to work on. But with this, we were in the studio the whole time, and almost all of it was demoed up front. So quite a lot of it, he just needs to mix. But so Pete did a lot of stuff at his own home studio.
Yes. So there was quite a few bits where I was surprised I ended up using things that I thought were part of the demo, like my backing vocals. I was like, oh, it ends up on it. But it was good. It made it fun. And what's so good is that Sean can replay things or blend things together so that, you know, we didn't really know what was going to happen a lot of the time. And sometimes we'd have a demo and it'd be like, we're not quite, there's something wrong with the sound of it. We want it to sound a bit more like this record. And so Sean goes, and he can play the drums in that style and get that kind of exact sound, basically.
And did you kind of sit with him and say, you know, really give him the, I'll use a big word, the gestalt of library music and soundtracks and all of these things, but how did you get that aesthetic, you know, into the record and still keep it, you know, what you wanted it to be as a continuity for the themes?
Well, partly, I suppose, Sean is on a very similar wavelength to us. And we've actually we've known him for a long time. And he's actually made a load of library records himself in the past and sample records, you know, with drum sounds.
To this day, people still try to define this band. And they're like, well, it's a disco band. Well, it's a pop band. Well, it's a... And at this moment in time where we live in a world of genres, where everybody literally is making playlists by genres... How do you answer that question these days when somebody's like, because you listen to like this album, it is absolutely impossible, but it is all under the category of pop music, is it not? Right? Because it's supposed to be music that's popular.
Yeah, it's definitely pop music. We've got pretty varied tastes. I think it seems quite common now for, I don't know, a group like the 1975, and anything you hear by them sounds completely different. They're like, I don't know if it's so they can fit onto any playlist, cookery playlist, holiday playlist, or whatever. It seems like people are doing that on purpose now, which is quite odd. But I don't know, we've just got like really varied tastes, and we don't... I think if we went out and like toured like some bands do constantly, if we'd done that at any point in our career, then we'd probably have finished years ago and we'd have ended up making records that sounded quite similar. But because we've always been fairly part-time about it, when we've got into a new kind of music, we've always managed to like put that into the mix. And so in like the current album, it's Pete's kind of soundtrack interludes, which is like something we haven't really done before, which I think sounds terrific. I don't know, things like this. I was really obsessed with this label called PC Music, which is kind of like a almost like novelty electronic label, very squeaky pop. So there's pretty little bit of that in there as well.
I like novelty next to electronic. those two words, especially since everybody's EDM. So did you know, because singles again are an interesting world these days, so Magpie Eyes, did you know that was quote the single or one of the singles? Did you feel like the hooks were that much stronger on that one than others when you heard it?
I think so. Our manager said he said, why don't we try that one as one of the singles, you know, which I was quite happy with.
The track that I watch people really get into live in concert is White Leaf. Right, they really get into White Leaf because it's kind of taking them down this path of nostalgia. It gives them, you know, again, you know, especially the younger crowd is looking for that you know, something to connect to, something to identify with, even if they were nowhere near it. Right, so they hear the 60s. Oh yeah, the 60s. Oh, the 70s. Oh yeah, I relate to that.
It's kind of about a nostalgia for like about a year ago, just before the Brexit vote.
I know, but you see, that's where the irony is.
An odd kind of nostalgia for the very recent past.
It's funny though, it's like a test to the audience, because we look at each other when sometimes Sarah goes, and now it's White Leaf, and there's a sort of tumbleweed
Boston.
Moment. Yeah, that was
tumbleweed
like,
in Boston.
Oh,
then,
really?
Yeah, yeah, and then another one. Yeah.
No sound.
I know. Other gigs you get. So we always look at each other and we're like, oh, we know what the gig's going to be like now.
Can we talk about Lieutenant Pigeon?
Oh, yeah.
One of the radio stations I was on when I was very young, and I was on very, very young, Moldy Old Dough, was it got played a lot. Oh. And so I'm like, I'll buy the single. And next thing you know, but the, you know, the chasm between the UK. And here, like Winchester Cathedral was a hit because it was a novelty thing. But things like Lieutenant Pigeon, things like, you know, I mean, all the young bands talk about Joe Meek every 5 minutes. They actually all idolize Joe Meek and they're trying to get these sounds. But Lieutenant Pigeon.
Lieutenant Pigeon were idolized Joe Meek as well because they recorded everything at home. And I interviewed him. I did a CD compilation of their alter ego, Stavely Makepeace.
Yeah.
This was for RPM, I think, about 10 years ago. And so I interviewed them, and I said, so what kind of sound were you trying to get? And I said, well, you know, we love Gene Vincent and Elvis. That's the kind of sound we were trying to get. And I'm thinking, bloody hell, you missed by a mile.
I was going to say, wait a minute. I don't hear any of that. I don't hear any of that in there.
None of it. I don't hear any of that either. And also, Stavely Makepeace was their serious group, and Lieutenant Pigeon was their novelty group. And I can't tell the difference there either. I think they looked quite upset that I couldn't tell the difference. But they're very much a unique group. And the amount of records they put out, because they only had like one hit basically, is amazing.
Right, that was it.
It's about sort of 25 singles and three albums.
But you know, we missed so much here. We got one hit by Cliff Richard. We didn't get you know, most of that stuff back in when I was getting Melody Maker. I would read it, and I would just buy the singles because, oh, they're in the top 10 in the UK. And that's how I learned all these things.
Yeah.
So that makes what you do very different, right?
Yeah, it's really different. I mean, I think, you know, the 70s in particular and early 80s, the American chart and the British chart were so completely different.
Motown, all the stuff from 65 was becoming in the top 10 in the UK.
In the 70s.
In the 70s.
Yeah, that's right. That's because of the Northern Soul clubs.
That's right.
That was like kind of the most overground Northern Soul thing, really. I think, you know, people probably still don't know it was Northern Soul.
No,
I mean, I remember like hearing What Becomes of the Broken Hearted in like 1974 when it got in the top 10 and just assuming it was a new record, because there's a ghost. There's a ghost in my house. That was I don't even know if that was a single first time round.
Cassettes. It's so interesting because somebody posted on Facebook, somebody that I'm with, they said, why would anybody be putting out cassettes again? Those sounded awful. But cassettes have a sound, just like, I mean, 8-tracks will just put Far Away.
Yeah.
But the decision to go cassette wasn't being hipster. Was it just kind of part of the theme and you thought, well, what would it sound like on a cassette?
It wasn't trying to be hipster, but we knew people would want them because... I mean, like a friend of mine's got a little kid who collects cassettes because it's easier, because he's 3 years old, so it's like he can't collect records because he'll smash them or scratch them, but cassettes is perfect. I don't know, I know a lot of people who like cassettes. I can't say I'm 100% a cassette fan, but I definitely...
Yeah, it's a sound, but it's definitely, it's impossible to get warmth, real warmth and real lows on a cassette.
Yeah.
It's best.
Well, they have a warmth of a type, a kind of wooliness.
Yeah.
But I used to...
Wow.
Yeah.
Has it been fun? Has this album been as much fun? I mean, the methodology that you've used, because you are a band, you're not a project. You get together, then you make solo things, then you make soundtracks, then you do all sorts of... You know, you DJ, do all these other things. But the energy's still there as a result, is it not? Isn't that kind of like... You didn't know when you were starting that was going to be the secret, right? All these years.
No. And I think that is. We're all doing different things. And when we get together, we have a real laugh, basically. And we like going away doing things like this.
Come up with a thing called a musical sandwich. And what that is two of your songs on the outside, but you'll pick one for Sarah in the middle.